We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined as always by Mike. Darius is still vacationing, traipsing around the world and enjoying himself. And today we're going to have a little bit of a philosophical discussion about team building. Last offseason, Lakers made several talent plays, right? Looking to acquire just the best player available, Dennis Schroeder, Montrezl Harrell. At the buyout, during the buyout market, they acquired Andre Drummond. And the reasons why you acquire talented players are obvious, right? But there can be a downside to that, in that talented players have expectations in terms of role, in terms of minutes, in terms of several elements of being on a team. And over the course of the season and even the offseason, several of those guys have complained in some way, shape, or form about their role, about their playing time, have made comments to that extent. So Mike and I are going to discuss today the idea of kind of chemistry versus talent. And those don't necessarily have to be mutually exclusive. On the best teams, you have both. But when we have LeBron and AD, Mike, those are the cornerstones. And I would argue that any player after that is a role player of some sort. And so the buying into a role is, it's a little, there's an alchemy to it that isn't quite as, it's not as sturdy as other evaluative components of basketball, right? Like, this guy's a good ball handler, this guy's a good finisher. It's a little trickier, right? And so just that human aspect of players oftentimes in their prime, you got Schroeder at 27, Trez around the same age, Drummond as well. They're, you know, playing for their next contract as well. So in an ecosystem where we have LeBron and AD as our cornerstones, how do you value that mix of talent versus a guy who's going to come in and be like, hey, I know why I'm here. I'm going to accept my role. And maybe I don't play in this playoff series. How do you measure that?
This specific Lakers team of the last few years, in terms of when they made the trade for AD, we have two really good examples of how it worked. And in a sense, if you put them in a vacuum, you can say, okay, clearly the way that you do this is the way they did it in 1920, and the way that kind of Pelinka's first roster in supporting two superstars, look at how well this worked. And then you can say, now that the season went how it went, you can almost look at it and think, well, all right, then they made a couple of talent plays and maybe the chemistry wasn't quite the same. But I would argue that that was much more of a product of the way that the two seasons went. And also just the pandemic. And so Joey Ramirez, our buddy, made a good point when the three of us were having a discussion for Lakers.com about the season. And just looking at how you cannot take these two seasons apart, you have to look at them together. And you have to look at the way that 2021 played out as a product of 2019-20 going so far. And I know I just said a lot of numbers there, even though it's simple. So here's the other way to put it. When the Lakers had all of the guys sort of playing roles around LeBron and AD the first season, since that team was winning and constantly winning and healthy, there were never really those pockets of the season where either you had guys complaining or we were going to hear it right? And that's a product of winning. And so whether it was Kuzma, for example, who at that point was still trying, wanting to get to more, as well as he should have, he kind of just had to embrace a role, and that worked out fine because the team kept winning. And then they went all the way and won the title. You know, had they crashed out earlier, then maybe that become, or if LeBron or AD goes down and sort of has to step up a certain way, then you start to hear that, well, wait, I'm the next guy that should step up. And that's why we talk about this current season, this just past season, February 14th, when AD went down and they were 21-6 and everything seemed to be pretty good with Shooter, with Harrell, with the whole team in general. The team was winning. The chemistry was even if not quite the same as last year, because they were still getting to know each other, everything seemed fine. And then as the losing went on, we get to the point where we are now. So, Pete, I didn't answer the actual question there, but I think it's important to contextualize what these last two seasons were. And then as we now, what we're going to do on this podcast is think about, all right, well, now that we have some of this in context, well, what is the ideal way to build a roster around two stars? And should you go more of the first route versus taking some of the additional talent? And I'll start with last year and then kick it to you for what you think for this coming season, because I liked the way that the Lakers, that they went for some of the additional talent, anticipating they were going to need it because of the lack of an offseason. So I thought that was the right call. Just bringing the same team back and saying, hey, go win a second title after what you just did, without some reinforcements, without some new energy, without some new hunger, I think that would have ended just the way this season ended, and with guys breaking down and so on. So that's my take on what just happened. If you want to come back to that, feel free. Otherwise, just how do you take all of this and process it as the Lakers look now to build the next roster around AD and LeBron?
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point in that, you know, if Anthony Davis goes down in a game four of one of our playoff series last season, there's a decent chance we lose that series, especially if it's a, you know, high quality opponent the way that Phoenix was. If we played Denver or someone like that, if AD goes down, it's a whole different ballgame. And that team could have had great chemistry and could have gotten along. You know, they got along great. They had a lot of cohesion, continuity, all these words we've been talking about throughout the season. And then AD goes down the wrong game, and then we don't win that title. So that, again, is another one of the aspects of evaluating this team, where you have to put the proper amount of credit / blame on the injuries regarding why things went the way that they did. The Lakers have always been a team that plays for talent, right? That looks to acquire the best player. At least my entire life, since Dr. Buss bought the team, this is something that, whether it's the Gary Payton, Karl Malone acquisitions, J.R. Ryder back in 2000, Michael Thompson, right? Orlando Woolridge back in the 80s, Sadale Threet was a guy that we went after to back up Magic. We always will go for the most talented players and try to make it fit. There's something to be said for, this is something I learned during the young core era, Mike, where I was really excited, like, hey, we're going to build this team and it's going to be this slow, strong build. And the guys were talented, but there was something off in that it was not, that's not who we are. That is not how the Lakers have historically been successful in building a team, which is not to say they can't build it that way. But I also think, Mike, there's something to be said for sticking to who you are and the personality that you have.
They also don't have to, right? Because they're the Lakers and they're in Los Angeles and they can get players. Whereas some teams have no choice but to go that way if they're not thinking they can play the free agent game.
Absolutely. It's just when LA tries to act like OKC or vice versa, there's going to be something off of that. There's going to be something off about that where it doesn't fit the circumstances. It's not appropriate to what that team and that market and those circumstances are. And so that was kind of a lesson that I learned during the young core era, is like, I don't see us being successful building in that way going forward, right? Just it's not appropriate to our particular circumstances because, again, we don't have to. And it's more about getting the best players.
And so agreed. And I also don't think that that was necessarily the plan during that. I think that it was, A, you had some contracts and it started with, so after Kobe got hurt and you were paying the max money to Kobe, who was of course, recovering from the Achilles surgery the next year. And then you had the Deng and the Mozgov contracts, right? Which you then had to use some of the, so it wasn't like, even though I think that they did, there were all these reported meetings, right, with various stars at the time. There wasn't the megastar that was able to come in. But I think that that was almost they almost were forced into that position of being in the draft and taking those guys in the lottery. And then, by the way, those guys are all 18 or 19 years old. And unless you mentioned OKC, Pete, well, you got to really hit on an all-time great player in Kevin Durant, who's probably going to end up a top 20 player when all is said and done. And then two guys who won the MVP. That's a different argument as to whether Russ deserved it. I did not vote for him that year. But, you know, but all-star level caliber players in him and Harden. And then they still didn't win. And that's like the absolute perfect way to go about that process. So it just underscores your point, really.
No, absolutely. And it's something that that is something in a town where that's the only major franchise. And there was time to go through some of those lumps in ways that's a little more difficult to do as a Laker. That said, I think there's a right way to chase talent, and then there's a downside to it. And that's really, so my vote always goes in pursue talent, pursue the best guys that you can get. But there's a certain point where there has to be some distinctions made. One thing, Mike, let me make a devil's advocate, not even devil's advocate. I actually believe this on some level. It rubs me the wrong way when guys who weren't on the title team are complaining about role and complaining about minutes. There's a certain amount of like, this ain't about you, you know, and this isn't about like your role. That said, I understand, Mike, their windows to make money are so short. And when you're in your mid-20s, you're off your rookie contract, you only got a couple cracks at those contracts, right? And the circumstances of the year before you enter free agency are going to play a big part into what kind of contract offer that you get. So is there a danger in pursuing those mid-20s types of guys that are in that spot versus I think of Dwight and I think of JaVale and I think of the Danny Green, older guys that have really accepted this is where I'm at in the NBA. This is my role. It's not something that they have ulterior things like fighting against them that are legit pressures for players that age.
Yeah. So this is one of those classic, it really is a case by case basis, but if you're generalizing, then yeah, guys that are on that swan song of their career that are still really good and, but sort of are considering taking a little bit less than they might be able to get somewhere else because they want to win. Yeah. That generally you would think is going to add to a roster better than somebody that still has room to grow and needs reps and needs shots. And usually these things come more in terms of offense than defense, right?
Because for sure.
But there are some players that just play the right way no matter what, and no matter what their contract is, and no matter, and that I would posit though that those guys typically aren't bucket getters, because usually the bucket getter type of that's almost its own trope in the NBA, and those types of guys are, they're always going to want shots. That's just kind of like the way that they play, and those guys usually end up as six men because you can't trust them to play a certain way, especially defensively in the starting lineup. And so that's a kind of a point, just a tangential point to this. But I think that when I'm picturing what the Lakers are going to do or going to want to try to do, they're going to have a list, and there's going to be a couple guys on there that are in the category that you just talked about of the, all right, well, here's a guy that's sort of, whether he's up and coming or established, but could potentially replace the scoring of Davis if he's out with an ankle tweak, you know, for a week. And then there's the guy who's just rock solid role player off the bench, Wes Matthews type, you know, that we can kind of feel good about on the roster, can bring into situations and not worry about it. And I guess the cheating answer to this is that you want both. To me, you don't want to have just role player type guys where you're absolutely depending on LeBron and AD. And at this stage of their careers, and if they ever miss any time, then you got no chance to just bridge the gap for a week or two. But you also don't want to have a lack of those kind of glue role player guys on the roster and have the guys that are all hungry to show more and to get to the next spot. And I thought that's why this last year's roster, Pete, you've talked about it so many times. It's like the one that got away, where I did think they had a pretty decent balance there to start the season. And you had your, you know, KCPs and Wes Matthews and Caruso's and what Kuzma has evolved into on one side. And then you had your Shooter and Harrell, and maybe those guys can help carry you through from a talent standpoint. And it just wasn't able to come together. But I think I will remember the balance of the roster better probably than history will shine on it for the specific way that had to go through that shortened offseason and the pandemic.
Yeah. It's kind of a chicken or the egg conversation, right? Is there other complaints if they're winning, right? There were guys dancing in the fourth quarter of the game of game three against Phoenix, in part because the talent was shining through, right, as a collective. And then 80's injury strikes, and it's kind of this, again, the one that got away, this great what if of a season. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll keep discussing. I think Mike brought up some really good points about the bucket getting types, because this is exactly, I think, the type of player that will be available at different ends of the spectrum, whether it's a prime caliber player or it's a guy who's a little bit older but capable of a little bit more. So let's take a break. When we come back, we'll discuss that.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
Michael, I love that point that you made about guys, the bucket getting types, right? We look at Dennis, we look at Trez. Those are guys who were sixth men, you know, coming off the bench. But when they were on the court, they were usually a top two offensive option. And that's the argument for these types of guys. Not only do they carry you through the regular season, but they're guys who can contribute in, you know, second quarters, late third, early fourth, even in playoff roles offensively. But that's something that, so, and in context with how our offense was this year, is that something like, how do you measure bucket getting? So you say shooting is overrated. How do you feel about scorers, right? With respect to this same conversation?
Yeah. You're setting me up here. Also somewhat overrated. The sixth man of the year always goes to the bucket getter off the bench. And like, who seems to be the guy that if you go play pickup ball, like, 8 out of the 10 guys on the court want to be that guy, right? Everybody wants to kind of play that way and get shots up. And I'm not saying that I haven't gone through periods like that, but my goal, as you are getting to know me, and I think you're the same way, by the way, I want to win the game. I want to win. If that means that if I'm out there with like my kids and two of their friends, it's 4 6-year-olds, then like I may try to score every time. If I'm out there with 4 NBA players, I'm doing nothing but setting screens, you know, diving on the floor, playing defense, scrambling. So you have to know who you are. You have to know your surroundings. And that's that archetype of a player, of a six-man scorer. Sure, some teams do just need that guy in the regular season. But guess when they don't need that guy? In the playoffs, because if you're far at that point, then you've got better offensive players in the starting lineup. And this is all of this is tailored, as it usually does, Pete, back to LeBron and AD. I don't want a six-man bucket getter on a team with LeBron and AD in a postseason, because I want LeBron and AD to have the ball because they're better. And if one of them doesn't have the ball, I want the other one to have it. And otherwise, I want you to shoot an open shot or I want you to cut to the hoop and get a layup. Are there exceptions to that? Sure. But more often than not, like the ball, if the ball is not going through those guys, and to use the typical example that we always do, and I feel like I'm hammering this point too much, but the Clippers the last couple of years, Kawhi and Paul George should have the ball in key situations going down the stretch. But sometimes they would want Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell to run screen roll. And so you've just got Kawhi sitting in one quarter. You got Paul George sitting in the other. And it's like, well, great. You know, that's not – so that play becomes much less effective when it's against the starting caliber defense and your two superstars aren't the ones that are putting the pressure on the defense. And that's why, like, I'm fine with a guy like that in the regular season. But Shooter, to me, doesn't fit into that exactly because he can also – A, plays defense, and B, he can play on the weak side when it's a primary action with LeBron or AD, get the ball late in the shot clock and either get to the rim or, you know, get at least a decent percentage three-point shot off because he's not being guarded out to that point. So I actually thought that was a pretty clever antidote and like a pretty clever trade and a guy that could fit potentially by being a bucket getter, but one that also can do other things. And to me, Pete, there aren't that many guys in the league that can do both of those things.
That's why the third option type guy is so important because he's, I think, that bridge in our ideal roster construction between LeBron and AD and those role guys that can kind of fit in around them but aren't going to really do much themselves. Lamar Odom is a perfect example of this type of number three option who can dabble in a little bit of all of these different aspects of the game. I would love if I could trade Dennis's speed for a reliable jumper, I would do it. But we did see, and again, it's in these small samples, the value of that speed, especially next to a LeBron and AD. So my question for you, Mike, is in that context, it sounds like almost you'd advocate for not any bucket getters around. Not to say that bucket getting is bad, but that you would really prioritize those 3-and-D guys that you got to be able to play defense if you're going to be on a LeBron and AD team.
Yeah, so this gets back to the earlier part of this where if you're the Lakers, I think your goal is to have it all. And whereas a lot of places don't have that opportunity. So sure, like I'm not saying you can't have a guy that just goes out there to get buckets like a Jordan Clarkson type. If you've got a guy like that on your roster, great. But just don't have him be one of the guys that you are prioritizing to the point where you are bereft of the things that you're really going to need in your best lineup around LeBron and AD. And that, I guess, Pete, is how I think sometimes about roster building in that it's not just about the starting lineup, but it's about how many of these guys can I trust to keep on the court in these postseason series? And while you're watching Suns and Bucks game 4, or depending on when you listen to this, whatever game it's at in the series, just watch and think about some of the guys that are on the court. And it's not very many because by the finals, you're already cutting it down. Like some of these guys in the court, the coaches know, like, this is not ideal, but we don't have any other options because of injuries, because of something else. And that's where I think the Lakers roster these last couple of years actually was really good, where you had up to 10 guys, you know, sometimes 11, where you were like, you know what, like, we're okay. We don't have to make a sub here to get this guy off the floor. And if that's the case, then you've done your job. Does that leave you a little bit short on, for example, some upside of the same thing we're talking about, like a bucket getter? And I mean, in a regular season especially, maybe, but I would just always prioritize the guy that I think I can trust in the situation that I need, because I'm less worried about my regular season record than I am about the ultimate playoff push if I'm the Lakers and I have LeBron and AD. So this isn't an exercise in overall roster construction. This is the Lakers roster construction when you've got LeBron and AD.
So that requires a certain degree of buy-in too, right? Like, I thought your point about how the guys who are used to being primary options tend to be the ones that can be a little more frustrated about touches and shots and roll and things like that. That's not something that generally your 3-and-D guys will do. And so what are the types of circumstances that a player has to be in his career to be able to fit in to LeBron and AD, just mentality wise, right? Like being able to go in and accept their role. And because I do think that dissatisfaction it erodes chemistry, even if it's not like an open finger pointing thing in the locker room or anything like that, but just a certain amount of it. There's not a togetherness when that mentality is too pervasive in a locker room. And that will be more pervasive when you have those scores. That said, like, you know, our half court offense wasn't the best part of our team this year too. Right. So how do you balance that, and who are the types of guys, and what point of their career are they in to be able to fit into that overall chemistry?
Well, I would argue too, though, that your half court offense isn't necessarily just going to get better because you have a bucket getter. Like you may be better off having a true point guard sort of organizer with that group, and maybe
good point.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So maybe especially when you've got AD, right? Like, because AD is one of the ultimate finishers in the game, that if the action around him is organized and he's being asked to just finish a play, that guy who organized it may not be getting, you know, scoring a whole lot, but he has that overall impact. In fact, I think there's an argument to be made for our backup point guard role to be exactly that.
And it's why, like, I think, for example, in Utah, I thought that Joe Ingles actually was kind of the key to that second unit, because he was the one that was organizing it. For Utah, he's an elite three-point shooter, and his defense is a little better than you think. And then it allowed Clarkson to just attack. And like that ended up working pretty well for Clarkson too, certainly. And he played well. And I'm a big fan, certainly, of Jordan, both as a player and as a person. But I think Ingles is the type of player, I think, that makes a second unit go more than the guy that's just asked to score. So that's one way of thinking about it. The other thought I had, Pete, so Memphis, I just think of them as an example. Memphis overachieved last year. And why? All right. So one of the reasons, they had great chemistry, they had great cohesion, but they didn't have the type of stars that the Lakers had. So it's not just the good teams that can benefit from the chemistry. And that can go across. If you had a player there that wanted more touches and wanted more shots and wanted more reps, I don't really think they had that guy. And part of that is because I think John Morant sets a great example and sets the table really well for that. I think Lillard has some of those same type of leadership qualities, although he's a higher volume player himself. But you know, off of that Memphis bench, you had a bunch of guys that just would play really hard. And same thing to an extent in the starting lineup, where that was like a good mentality team. You can have a middle of the road type team, and I'd say Memphis is a little bit better than that, but still, we none of us thought they were actually going to win a playoff series, and it can be at the highest level. So I think there isn't a player that's discontent with his playing time and is going to impact the team's ability to win because of it. I don't think any team wants a guy like that on the team. Now, is there a trade-off in talent sometimes? Sure. But I don't think that whether you're a team trying to win the title or a team in the middle, that you want guys that are just there looking for their own stuff.
No, absolutely. And that's why my mindset is really geared toward veterans. I think that guys in their 30s, guys who may be more 16-game players than 82-game players at this point of their career, I think that they're more equipped to step into that type of role. The idea of an offensive organizer off of the bench is really intriguing to me. I'm curious, in this ecosystem of the Lakers, where it's, you know, it's very built off of these two guys, LeBron and AD, how does that, we saw this with Rondo a couple of years back. Do you think we need to prioritize a player like that within the overall construct of what we have? Somebody outside of LeBron and AD who can do that, as opposed to the bucket getting type?
Yeah, that's a tricky one with this roster in one sense, because the two guys that came in off the bench as guards a lot of the time were Alex Caruso and Talen Horton-Tucker. And we love, clearly, both of these players, and for different reasons. Neither one of them is a specific organizing backup point guard. Like, and when Rondo would play, so THT was more of a, you know, he would just come in for spot minutes here and there, but he wasn't a rotation player when Rondo was here. So then Caruso could slot in next to Rondo in that second guard spot and do all the stuff that Caruso does. But if you have Caruso and THT back on the roster, and you know, hopefully that all works out, it's tricky unless you want to. I guess you could play THT at the three, certainly, and it doesn't matter as much off the bench, and maybe that's the best spot for him anyway. But like, then, you know, if you're having another guy in that spot that is that kind of organizing point guard, I don't know, are you a little bit too small? Is a little bit unnecessary? if AD is going to play with that spot. It's an interesting question that I now want to kick back to you and see what your take is on that kind of a spot.
So I think we need one guy whose decision-making with the ball in his hands is one of his best attributes, right? That's one thing about our guard core last year, whether it's Dennis, KCP, Alex Caruso, THT, none of those guys are guys where their decision-making as a pass shot decisions, organizing, none of that is in the top three of the things that they do well, right? And so I think that having at least one guy, especially when we're running so much in the way of isolations, post-ups, ball screens, not terribly system-based offense, that having somebody to get everybody to their right spots. The best evidence of that is when Rondo was locked in, right? Because obviously Rondo didn't play that way all of the time, but somebody who could really had the decision-making and the mental aspects of the game really mastered. I think having one guard like that is, I'd actually prioritize that over a scorer, because I do think it unlocks AD to a certain extent. That said, I would take a bigger, slower type of player, because what you pointed out about you may be too small if that's the case. That was one of the issues with our backcourt this year, right? Is that with KCP and Dennis, KCP is not short necessarily, but he's kind of slight of build. He's going to lose battles around the basket. And the same would be true of Dennis. That I think I would take like a bigger, slower, more deliberate type of guard that gets guys to their right spots and but doesn't have a ton of shake or won't break you down off the dribble. I'd prefer to have one guy at least like that as opposed to the guard core we had last year.
And I think too that that speaks to the way that probably you and I both just like to watch and appreciate the game of basketball. Like, because that to be a player that does that, you have to understand the game really well. You know, you have to be in the film room. You have to just understand your role and what your skills are, what your teammates' skills are. So it doesn't necessarily, you're right, it doesn't have to be like a little point guard. It could be a big guard. There are some wings that do that great. I mean, not many, and those guys are certainly hard to come by. But yeah, I think we've come to a place sort of in a I wasn't even thinking this is where we were going to go, right? Which is why I like these discussions. But this is a good idea, I think, for the type of player that would work well with that. And maybe though, Pete, that's easy to say, because that type of player, I believe, would work well with any team, you know, at any level of basketball. But I do specifically like how it would fit this team.
Well, the one thing about those types of players is a lot of teams have the need for a guard who can break down a defense and a guard who can really get into the teeth and put pressure on the rim. And that's something that I think we have less of a priority on in the backcourt as a result of LeBron and Anthony Davis absorbing a lot of those responsibilities. So, yes, that guy is valuable for most teams, but I think that they're more valuable for us because we don't need them to necessarily break down the defense as much as we do to get everybody in their right spots and be able to knock down an open jumper. And those guys, I like, as in the spirit of this discussion being about how you can trade talent for there's a downside to making talent plays of guys wanting bigger roles. Everything about this, whether it's the on-court stuff, the off-court stuff and ideas of role, I'm thinking of like a guard in their 30s who's been through some wars, who wants to win a title, is at that point of their career. Maybe they're a little slower than would demand a $20 million a year type of contract at this point. But that, as we talk this out, I'm wanting a bigger, slower guard that, like Ron Harper back in the day, Brian Shaw. Lakers history is replete with these types of guys.
Yeah, I was like, you sound like Phil Jackson, right? That's Phil.
That's right.
Like,
he
always liked to have a kind of guy on his roster like that. And part of the reason for what you said is that you're also trying to think about defense, and you're thinking about, can this guy play up into a lineup with big wing stars? And for Phil, right, it was MJ and Scottie, and then it was Kobe, and in a differing way, Shaq. But yeah, I like that. I like that idea as a concept. Let me, along this, sort of not the same exact lines, but just thinking about roster, let me just throw something back to you about the center position now. And we mentioned before, Marc Gasol is under contract again for next year. And I think that the way that he fit, I'll just speak for me, you can speak for you. I was totally fine with him as the starter. And I thought that he played absolutely well enough to stay in that spot. And I'm eager to see how an extra year and some comfortability can impact things for next year. But just as a theory, how do you feel about that space five versus the vertical spacing five that the Lakers had the prior year? And what do you think is ideal? Do you think it matters since both of them have their benefits? Like, how have you thought about that from a basketball and a roster standpoint?
I prioritize that vertical guy more than the stretch guy because we have the best stretch five in the NBA in Anthony Davis, you know, and that if that is what a lineup, this is all reverse engineered from the playoffs, right? And if a lineup is calling for a five out lineup where you've got some mobility at the five, like we've already got the best dude at that, which isn't to say that AD can't roll and be put pressure on the rim, but that type of guy, there's also the DeAndre Ayton has been fascinating to watch in these playoffs in terms of how he impacts other teams and how he's impacted by lineups, right? Milwaukee goes to Giannis at the five in game three, and it's like three straight possessions off of switches. Ayton shooting jump hooks in the post when he wasn't as big of a part of the offense before that. I think that these playoffs have really illustrated a prioritization of perimeter mobility defensively, which is often not found in the same type of player that can be a vertical threat. The ability to both punish and spread out defenses is extremely important. And when we think about basketball, we think about this as the shooting era right now, and it has been for a while, but the game is always moving forward and it's always moving into the next era, which is almost invariably the counter to the previous era, right? It's an answer to where things have gone. And that's why that perimeter mobility that we're seeing Phoenix struggle with athletic size. And that's something that is a way to beat teams. There's been such a priority placed on shooting and skill out on the perimeter that it's not easy to find those guys in really, really large humans. And so teams have downsized in a way where there's a vulnerability there where athletic size can really punish some very, very good teams. And I think that's really a big part of the theory of this team. One of the ways to do that, Mike, though, is above the rim, winning that game, those games up in the skies. And so I do think that having one lob guy, you know, that where that's his main thing, I would prioritize that over Mark. That said, to wrap up this thought, and this plays into the whole idea of this pod, is when we signed Drummond, it ended up pissing off all of our fives, right? Like at different points, Mark was unhappy because he wasn't playing. Trez has made comments afterward. Drummond has made comments where that I do think that are all of these talented guys going to be able to play? It has to be prioritized this offseason in making our talent plays. And hopefully one of those guys is a vertical five. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I think that goes right back to this ridiculous season that we just saw and all of the injuries. And when Drummond was signed, it was, we didn't know exactly right about Anthony Davis. And the assumption, of course, that he was going to come back and be 100% from that injury, but like he wasn't playing yet when they had to make that decision. And Marc Gasol was in the COVID protocol, was in the NBA health and safety protocol. And it just was such a disrupted season that I thought that made total sense, especially for what they had to give up. And it was well worth the risk to do so. But now that you're having this offseason to craft what the roster is going to look like, I do think you have to take all that stuff into consideration. And an ideal roster buildup, we just saw this when they won the title. You've got some of your veterans on the end of the bench that like a Dudley that are there that aren't really going to play key minutes for you, but can come in and give you a lift here and there and are great in the locker room. And there's nothing that's going to come of them not playing. And ideally, you don't have too many players other than that. You know, maybe you have one or two because you are going to get an injury, but you don't want three or four guys that are all talented enough to play, but that can't play because there's too many guys that need minutes. So I just think that's true. And it's also, though, there's also an element, Pete, of like, if you're not happy in this situation when we're trying to win a championship and you've got LeBron, you've got AD, that if guys are doing that kind of stuff within the course of the season, you know, that has to be policed out of the locker room or even like guys, sometimes guys need to get cut or traded because the last thing that you can, like, you don't want to penalize the front office for bringing in talented players because those guys, you know, can't figure it out and make it work. And again, even that is just sort of that's not acknowledging the feelings, which I'm again trying to get better at this stage of my life, acknowledging people's feelings, right? That's not acknowledging the feelings of a guy that, because it would suck if you're there,
of course,
you know you can play.
Of course.
So yeah. it's hard. This stuff isn't easy, and it's why it's a difficult job. But I just think that you have to have those conversations. And I know that they do, right? And I know that they will when they're assembling the roster.
Yeah, that's something where figuring that out ahead of time, it's easy to, you know, say all the right things and everybody be on the same page in the preseason or at the moment of signing. But being able to be like, hey, is this somebody who, if will they be able to take a step back and accept a lesser role in this particular series or over a couple of series, that is a difficult part that speaks to the difficulties of building a roster and all of the different parts that go into it. It's one of the many, many wonderful things about basketball is that this is part of the equation, but so are a lot of other things. So this is a conversation I think will continue as we get into the offseason and able to talk about specific players. But I really wanted to talk about this because this has been obviously a theme of the offseason, is different guys making comments here and there. I wanted us to address it. Tomorrow, we'll be back to discuss Pivotal Game 4 in the NBA Finals, a series that's turned very interesting. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double-teamed. Just pass out in front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. That next to the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance,
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal! Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddy pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two. One.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.